or older. However, in the case of retired military personnel, the tax exemption may not be claimed until age 65 or older. Then, to add insult to injury, such exclusion is reduced dollar for dollar to the extent of any earned income received during the taxable year. Again, may I say, all that retired military personnel are asking is for fair and equal treatment. Although I have no concrete proof, the discriminatory provisions of Oregon tax laws are apparently based on the erroneous idea that all military personnel enjoy a relatively lavish retirement income. This is far from the truth. The average retirement income of all ranks is less than $700 per month, or about $8,000 per year. In addition, many retirees are disabled and unable to work and must depend largely on their retirement income. Surely it is time to equalize the treatment accorded federal civil service and military service retirees. Although I do not want to start a controversy, it is interesting to note that the retirement income of state civil service retirees under the public employees retirement system are exempt from state income taxes. Yet, I think everyone would agree, this system too is a public retirement system. What is the rationale for this difference in treatment? Frankly, I don't know. Perhaps the architects of Oregon's tax structure, in considering tax exemptions, were imbued with what is now known as the McCall syndrome, which encouraged people to visit but not stay in Oregon. For example, did you know that Rhode Island and Oregon are the only two states left with inheritance estate tax laws on the books, and that is as pertains to the survivor's benefits that military retirees may grant to their dependents. But our tax, we do have a $100,000 exemption, but Oregon and Rhode Island are only two with any. Along the same line, you might be interested to note 15 states, including the neighboring state of Washington, completely exempt military retired pay. Might mention I'm taking exception there to Representative Yee's statement that there were five states. If you would care later, I can give you the exact states that are exempting military retired pay. Another 20 states, including Oregon, provide a partial exemption. Oregon's exemption of 3,400 was enacted years ago. Double-digit inflation and the rapid increase in the cost of living the past few years has worked a hardship on all retirees on a fixed income. An increase in exemption to 6,500, as proposed in Senate Bill 384, is considered most reasonable in light of current conditions. By the same token, to deny the exemption to a retiree who receives $25,000 or more in household income is considered unfair, inequitable, and discriminatory in concept. Why should a retiree with a household income of $24,999 be able to claim the exemption, and a retiree with a household income of $25,000 be denied it? We join with the retired federal civil service employees in urging this provision of the tax laws be abolished. Now, please bear with me while I wax philosophical for a moment. In view of this legislator's concern with an austere budget and limited revenue, this state would do well to encourage federal civil service and military service retirees to retire in Oregon. And providing tax incentives is probably the best way to encourage retirement in Oregon. In 1978, we had 14,000 military retirees in Oregon. In 1979, we had 13,000 retirees, or a loss of 1,000 retirees to other states, particularly Washington. At that time, the average retiree income was $6,000 per year. So, in effect, the state's economy lost some $6 million. In 1980, there are some 35,000 federal civil service and military service retirees living in Oregon. They bring into the state in the neighborhood of some $300 million a year in retirement income. And most of it is spent right here in Oregon. Not only that, federal and military retirees generally prove to be responsible citizens and are a credit to their community and to this state. Overall and in the long run, we have no doubt that it would be good business from every standpoint to encourage both federal civil service and military service retirees to make their home in Oregon. In summary, military retirees endorse and support Senate Bill 384. However, we ask and strongly urge this committee to amend the bill so as to provide equal treatment to federal civil service and military service retirees. The proposed amendment is simply to delete subparagraph 3, section 1, in its entirety. Thank you.
Okay, any questions from the for the witness?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hamm.
You recognize, accurately so, that we've got a money problem this biennium. So that when a bill comes along to correct an obvious inequity, legislators are caught between a rock and a hard place. We may want to do something. The question is, how can we do it? The question I want to ask you, if we assume that this revenue impact here is $14.1 million, and I don't know what effect your amendment will have on that. Presumably it would increase the impact, but I'm not sure. But let's assume that we've got a $14 million impact here that's not in the governor's budget, and by everything that this committee has been told, simply isn't available to us. But by way of treating this problem, how would you react to a suggestion that we amend this bill become effective January 1st, 1983. Now, what that would do would give the governor in the next 2 years the warning that this was legislative intent and would be very strongly suggested that he ought to put it into his budget. And if, by any chance, we are still poverty-stricken in 1983, the legislature could always reverse it if they had the guts to do it. I'm trying to seek a solution.
Yeah.
Could you respond to that, please?
Well, I would suggest perhaps that that is a matter for negotiation.
I like your kind of
talk. Let us first try to get 384, and as a alternative, then let's back down and say, well, we'll go along with making it 1982 first. And if that won't go, then make it 1983.
Well, 82 wouldn't help us because we have to deal with,
yeah,
with 2 years
by the budget, I realize.
Well, I very lost a suggestion for the committee's consideration.
I think what you're saying is that you'd rather have it now, but if that was the final result, you simply like to see some action, is what you're, is that
that's
your response?
In your work sessions and in discussions, if putting it 81 is going to deny it entirely, I think I would prefer that it go to 83 than not have it at all.
Further questions of the committee? If not, thank you very much, sir.
And I have copies here.
Fine. If you'll give that to the clerk, I'd appreciate it. The next four witnesses, I'd like to have the clerk note that I'm going to ask the next four witnesses have signed up on both the Senate Bill 477 and Senate Bill 384, and I purposely would appreciate if you would address both bills at this time. Let the record show that we're holding a hearing at this time on both bills. And I'll call the first witness, and I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce it, but you've got to help me. Is it Art Kirky?
Keel.
All right, Keel. Yes, sir. Will you come up, please? I kind of held you off one witness, sir, so that you'd have the opportunity to speak to both bills. I hope you will excuse that. I just thought we could give you an opportunity.
I hope you excuse me for not putting Senate Bill 477 of my written testimony. I wasn't aware that it was coming up so fast.
There is no problem, and we'll let the record note. I thank you for the committee's benefit. You might touch on 384 first and then go to 477, sir.
My name is Art Keel. I reside at 422 Portland Road, Northeast Salem. I am a retired Air Force enlisted man concerned with Oregon law that is discriminatory towards retired military, particularly the bull statutes that we have talked to today, 477 and Senate Bill 384. My written testimony has been covered by previous witnesses, but I'd like to skip down and just talk a little bit about how the general public views military retirement. And it's often viewed as a gratuity bestowed on members of the armed forces by the federal government. That direct 7% deduction from the pay of federal civil service personnel is a visible and widely recognized contribution to their retirement. However, the imputed system for military retirement is not so discernible to our nation's taxpayers. I could go into the mechanics of this if you'd like, but the important point is that civil service and armed forces take-home paychecks have been equally affected by their retirement systems. They both get nicked 7%. There are just over 13,000 retired military residents in the state of Oregon, and they return to the Oregon economy almost $120 million annually of federal tax money paid by Oregonians. Oregon government does not have to expend any money or effort to get this return. The state does not have to appeal for a grant. There are no forms or reports to file, nor does the state have to send an emissary to Washington, D.C. Most of the military retirees own their own homes, pay property tax, and spend their share of the $120 million right here in Oregon. The military retiree is only asking for equal consideration with other public service retirees. We would strongly urge the committee to delete all of subsection 3, section 1 of ORS 316.067. This would require amendment to either bill. And I thank you for the opportunity to express my views, sir.
Thank you, sir. And are there questions from the committee? If you'd like to leave your written testimony,
skip through it because it was repetitious to some of the others.
W.G. Campbell.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Warren G. Campbell. I'm Air Force retired, and I am from the city, the home of the number one basketball team in the nation, Corvallis, Oregon.
Now, can you guarantee a win Saturday? Is what I want the real scoop right now. Before we get into this silly taxation, I want to know about there. Are you going to win?
Absolutely no guarantee. Excellent odds, but no guarantees.
All right, thank you. I'm sorry.
Much again of what I have to say here has been said by previous speakers, so I'll try to do some paraphrasing and maybe read a couple of more important things rather than go through the whole works. I did learn one thing that hasn't been mentioned here. I'm curious as to whether anybody has confirmation of that. I asked when I first heard about this discriminatory aspect of the treatment of the civilian and or federal civil employees and military. And I was told that there was an effort to equalize this as far as through the courts, trying to determine whether this indeed was unconstitutional or illegal or whatever. I understand it did reach the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court rule was, yeah, sure, it's discriminatory, but the state has the prerogative to be discriminatory if it so desires with regard to income tax. So that was the first step. The next step then was for me to try to determine just what the basis perhaps was for the original legislation as far as that being discriminatory against military retirees. So what I learned was one of the things perhaps, other than what was mentioned as far as the lucrative or lavish pay of military, was that the civil service system was contributory, whereas the military was not. And this perhaps was the reason for making the difference between the two. I checked with a number of civil service people, and I again haven't confirmed this with statistics, but I am told that for a person who puts in, say, 30 years as a civil service employee, will get back all of what he contributed to the system in the first 2.5 to 3 years of his retirement. So therefore, that would not appear to be a real valid criterion on which to base discriminatory practices with regard to the exemption of military versus civilian pay from taxes. Again, pretty much a repeat, perhaps, having an attractive system of retirement income tax exemption can have a significant effect on the state's economic condition. Most of the money for Oregon's workers probably comes from within the state. The more money is received from outside the state, which is spent inside its borders, the more prosperous the state can be. Attraction of large numbers of retirees to Oregon can be not only financially beneficial, but also from the standpoint of volunteer services they often perform. And finally, I realize that Oregon, as with the rest of the nation, may face severe economic problems in the coming years. Additional revenue may have to be raised, and citizens are firmly set against such things as a sales tax. Thus, I am really not here to try to justify a specific exemption amount, $6,500 or whatever the amount might be. But I do urge that you approve legislation that will equalize the income tax exemption conditions for the civil and the military retirees. This, I feel, applies to both of the two bills. I did not come prepared with a special statement for 477.
Thank you. Are there questions by members of the committee? Thank you very much, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you.
You can also leave copies of the written part with our staff.
I did it at the beginning.
Thank
yes.
you very much. C.L. Hyatt.
I am Chester Hyatt from Albany, Oregon. Retired military, 22 years in the service, 2 years, the Oregon National Guard, 1939, 1940, 41, and the rest of the time was spent in the service outside of the state.
Mr. Hyatt, I can only assume you were either a bosun's mate or a staff sergeant. Which was it?
I was a drill sergeant initially.
I thought so.
I had a pretty close, didn't I?
You go ahead. I'm sorry.
I am currently retired from the general workforce, and of course I am on pension like the rest of the federal employees that are here. During this tax statement or tax payment period, I noted that the state was giving the civil service people the $3,400 deduction, and of course at age 62 this becomes of paramount importance to me. I further noted that the federal income tax rules treat both alike, and I too am going to state that this is preferential treatment or discriminatory or words to that effect. So I naturally requested my state representative, Maggie, to represent us on this matter. Now, many civil service people, as well as myself, immigrate to this state after completing or retiring from primary occupations. And as such, we should be treated alike. I was not. For example, a resident of this state during 20 years of my service. I was in the rest of in other parts of the world. We both receive our pensions and our income from the federal government. Our increases and or decreases as it may be are tied to the same CPI or wage scale, cost of living index. Now, in the rationale, and so far as discrimination is concerned, some say that military retire at an early age and can move into other occupations more effectively. This may or may not be the fact. I retired at 46, and believe me, at 46, many corporations as well as businesses don't look too attractive, do not look upon you with too much favor insofar as a long-term employee. I know of some that retired after the age of 50. I know of some that retired younger as well. And it is, of course, a fact that the both types can work after they have retired. And in this particular case, the federal employee, the civil service employee, does and can get his $3,400 deduction, and the military, in this case, gets nothing. Not being fully aware of the bills that were in front of this committee, I can only say that I believe there should be equal treatment. And whatever the changes are, I believe it should apply to both. And it is recommended that you consider moving this bill through the legislature. And I believe that I can speak for the military in making this statement that we should have better, we don't say we should have better treatment in this area. On the other hand, we don't believe we deserve less. We ask for equal consideration on this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hyatt. Are there questions of Mr. Hyatt? Thank you very much.
Thank you. You want me to leave a copy of this with you?
Yes, please. There, anyone who has not signed up to testify, had a chance to wish to testify on either Senate Bill 477 or 384? Being none, the committee will turn its attention now to Senate Bill 305. Have you been giving a breakdown of what the bill did?
Well, I have. Okay. Jim wanted to come in.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and summarize the bill?
Senate Bill 305 increases the property tax exemption for war veterans and their widows from $7,500 to $15,000 of true cash value. This would begin in 1982, and after 1982, the bill would increase the exemption each year by the average rate of increase in true cash value of all homesteads. The revenue impact of this bill is that there is no impact on local government, but the measure will exempt about $240 million in true cash value in 1982. This means a shift of about $4 million in taxes, almost all, onto other homesteads.
Okay. Hal Woods.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Hal Woods. I reside in Roseburg. I speak for the American Legion Department of Oregon. On Senate Bill 305, first of all, we ask that the bill be amended. I believe you all have copies of the requested amendment. On page 1 of the printed bill, line 15, delete $2,500 and insert $5,000. This bill, gentlemen, is long overdue. This law was first enacted in 1953 at $1,500 exemption. In 1955, it was amended to $7,500. In 26 years, it has not changed. We ask you to seriously consider looking at this because of the inflation factor, which has been used many times here, and I'm sure during the course of the session you're going to hear those words. In 1976, April, I ran a cursory survey of what prices or what valuations have done from that time to 1976. Valuations and taxes increased accordingly up to 775%. My previous home here in Salem, prior to moving to Roseburg, when I bought that home in 1974, the assessed valuation was $20,500. Today, that same home is assessed at almost $64,000, and my taxes have increased 300% during that time. My income certainly has not increased to that extent. In the 1979 session, I requested a similar bill to, on this subject, which was accepted and considered by this committee and by the House committee. At that time, I was told by a member of the House that I was a special interest group and therefore was not deserving of special consideration because this was strictly a special interest bill. Which is correct. I am representing a special interest group. I'm representing the people that can least afford these major impacts which are given to us as a result of the increased taxes which we are forced to bear every year, and in some cases to the extent to where we cannot continue living in that home because of the astronomical taxes. But when it comes to special interest groups, now I'm no expert on this subject, but I have been told by people from the Department of Revenue that if you want to consider special interest groups or compare special interest groups, let's compare the property tax exemption for disabled veterans and widows to the farmer organizations. And many of the people in that area are not farmers. There's one gentleman that I know here in Salem that owns 11 acres outside of town here. A prime ground is already platted for subdivision, all the necessary permits for construction are there and have been approved. That man year before last paid $7.39 in taxes. That man has absolutely no intentions of using that for farm purposes at the end of the 10-year deferment date. But during that 10-year time, that ground is appreciating every year. As a result, when he does subdivide, the value is going to be considerably higher than what it was at the time that he purchased it. There's abuses in every program. This is one of those abuses. But this was only as a comparison as to the terminology of a special interest group. We ask that you sincerely study and consider this and ask for approval and send it out with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. Are there questions? Mr. Woods, on this program, the going to $5,000 income, as you recommend, that would then qualify one for the $15,000 exemption, then, if their income was under $5,000. Have you checked as to what the property tax liability, given the HARP program and the 30% reduction, would be for most people in that category?
No, I have not. I'm sorry to check.
It would. They should be nearly fully refunded as far as property tax concerned, but inflation sure has raised the total liability, and I did co-author a bill like this 2 years ago.
There is one thing that I would like to point out, which was not graphically pointed out, perhaps not to the members of this committee, but to the people sitting in the audience, and that is that that impact statement, it's true this does not have any impact on the general fund. It has an impact on the entire state, but on a county-by-county basis.
Yeah. I think they made it clear.
The entire $3 million or so did not come out of just one county's
coffers.
What I guess part of the point I was making is that the reduction in tax liability in part may be to the state general fund as the passage of this bill, because our 30% amount on those would be less if there was an exemption, and the HARP payment would be is adjusted downward as well. So the real savings in this bill may be to the state general fund. It's kind of an ironic twist. Okay, no other questions. Thank you very much. Mr.
Thank
Henry
you,
Stevenson.
Well, I started the day wrong already. I was worried about getting a parking place, and so I was in a hurry to get out of the house. As I closed the door, I realized my keys were in the house. Important to have a car key in my wallet. So I get here and I find the important part of my notes are on my table at home.
I just returned from Corvallis giving a speech, and I did the same thing, except my notes were in my office.
Great feeling.
That is. But my speech was shorter.